And welcome back once again. I'm Steve Buss. Joining us right now is Christina Olds, Director of Museum Operations for the Pacific Coast Air Museum. Glad to have you here today.
Oh, it's so great to be back this year. Good. What a great week we've been having.
So far, so good.
So far, so good.
Day five, and things are looking up. Tell us a little bit about your museum.
Well, it's a museum at the Charles M. Schultz Sonoma County Airport in Santa Rosa, California, north of San Francisco. It's a great place. We've got 40 static aircraft on display. I'm having a big Vietnam Veterans weekend on the 15th of August with people coming in from all over. We've got 10 Vietnam-era aircraft that are going to be open. And we found out just last month that the F-4 that's on our grounds actually flew in Operation Bolo following my dad in 1967. And that's been pretty exciting. I'm building up a whole history on that aircraft right now, and I'm trying to find the pilot.
Okay. And you mentioned your dad, and that you have written a book about your father.
Yes, Fighter Pilot. It's called Fighter Pilot, Memoirs of Legendary Ace Robin Olds, and it came out 4 years ago. It's been tremendously well received. People are just absolutely loving it. And my favorite thing is meeting all the people who are finding out about my dad for the very first time because right. of that book. It's
yes.
been great.
It really has. Since it was released, the interest in your dad's story, it just continues to grow, and it's because he was a pretty colorful character, and he did some pretty incredible things
very
as well.
Very colorful character. And what I'm finding in all my travels around the country, and I just went to Korea to the 8th Fighter Wing, which was his wolf pack and is still his wolf pack, is that the active duty Air Force pilots around the world revere him. He's like their spirit animal. You know, Robin Olds is the renegade that they all wish they could be and the leader they all wish they had now. And
yes.
so it's really wonderful knowing that his spirit carries on even more than it was 40 years ago.
Right. And World War II combat veteran, Vietnam combat veteran.
Yes.
But I want to go back just a little farther, something I recently discovered, and that is he was an All-American football player at West Point.
Absolutely. All-American football at West Point. Also in the National Aviation Hall of Fame. He's the only man in both of those halls of fame.
Excellent. And following graduation from West Point, he was moved into Army Air Corps.
Right.
And began training and flew the P-38 in combat.
P-38 in combat. He became his group's first ace in the with five in the P-38. And in fact, there's a P-38 on the field right now at Warbirds in Review. Fagan fighters have repainted their flying P-38 as SCAT-3, and it is reminiscent of the SCAT that he flew in D-Day.
And what's the significance of the name?
Well, he named all of his aircraft SCAT because his roommate at West Point was named SCAT Davis, and SCAT wanted to fly, but he washed out of pilot training because he was colorblind, and he was just heartbroken. So my dad told him, he said, "Don't worry, SCAT, I'm going to take you flying with me through my whole career." So from SCAT 1 all the way up to SCAT 27, which sits in splendor at the National Museum of the Air Force at Dayton. It's a beautiful, beautiful aircraft. And he shot down two MiGs in the F-4 that's at the museum in Dayton. So every aircraft is named SCAT.
Excellent. 17 confirmed kills, making him a triple ace.
Right.
Over two wars. He, as I said, flew the P-38 in combat in World War II. Unusual that he had a break and not deployed to Korea.
Well, and that's a great story, too.
Yeah.
Well, I also should tell you that they switched to, when Hub Zamke took over their group,
okay.
they switched to Mustangs before the end of the war. But no, he didn't make it to Korea. He was furious about that. He kept blaming his commander, his squadron commander, all through his life at his various commands during the Korean wartime for keeping him out of Korea, because the colonel kept saying, "If I'm not going to Korea, you're not going to Korea." So my dad kept blaming him, and he didn't find out until about 10 years before he passed away, through a friend who had worked in the Pentagon in the human resources, whatever it was called then,
right.
that it was actually my mother that kept him out of Korea, because she was a movie star in those days, and she was filming one of the first television shows in New York City in 1951, 52. Mm-hmm. And the producer of the show was Lawrence Rockefeller, who was a family friend, and she went to Lawrence and said, "If you send my husband to Korea, I will not be an actress in your TV show." So Lawrence pulled the strings, and my dad never made it. He was so stunned to find out. But the worst part was that he felt so guilty for blaming his commander all of those years for keeping him out of Korea. But the good thing, if he had gone to Korea, he never would have gone to Vietnam.
Right.
You know, he would have progressed on through the ranks and had different assignments. And so it was perfect the way it worked out.
Right. And in Vietnam, I from what I've read, Operation Bolo was where he really, really made his mark and made an impact in Vietnam.
Yes, yes. He set up with his wingman, J.B. Stone, they devised a Trojan horse sort of diversion because the 105s were constantly getting knocked down by the MiGs. But the MiGs would disappear. If the F-4s came up, the MiGs just didn't want to engage with them. And so they devised an operation to disguise four flights of F-4s as if they were 105s. They changed the radar, they changed the way they flew, they changed the call signs, they changed the armament. They flew at the same time in the same formation, and that it was January 2nd, 1967 when they all took off. And sure enough, the MiGs came up and they knocked down seven of them that day, which at that time was about a third of the North Vietnamese Air Force. And they didn't actually come back up for another 3 months after that.
Amazing.
So it was a huge, huge event, made all the news around the country. So very, very exciting. That's when I really got, and I was, 14, 15? That's when I really got to know that what my dad was doing over in Vietnam was pretty, pretty hairy stuff.
Right. And, of course, at this time, he also has his trademark mustache, handlebar mustache.
Well, not at Bolo. Right after Bolo, he started growing that mustache. And he did it deliberately, and it grew out of bounds and out of bounds and out of bounds. He grew it as much as he could because he wanted to give all the guys a sign, a symbol, that he was going to break some rules and change some tactics and disobey the orders that were coming from Washington for their sake. And so that mustache became known as Robin Old's single-digit salute to Washington, D.C. And to this day, kids around the world will grow their mustaches in March, called Mustache March. Chief of Staff last year sanctioned it in honor of Robin Old. So around the world, all the active duty guys will grow their mustaches for a whole month in honor of him.
Excellent, excellent. And following Vietnam, he also obviously transitioning out of combat roles but into more administrative roles, but also was with the Air Force Academy for
right.
a period.
Right. He was Commandant of Cadets at the Air Force Academy for 4 years.
And that was kind of a dark time for the
Well, it was dark, and he didn't know if he was going to love that command. You know, you take a combat veteran and plop him at the Air Force Academy, but he ended up loving that assignment. Had to shave off the mustache before he got there, but when he arrived and gave his first speech, every cadet at the academy had a fake mustache on to greet him. But it ended up, it was a dark time because the Vietnam War was still going on, and he desperately wanted to get back to combat. He did a lot of speeches around the country. You know, it was such an unpopular war. People who were serving over there were not appreciated for what they were doing, and it was tough for him. It was really tough, but being at the academy kept him really focused on helping these youngsters know that they had a duty, and a patriotic duty, and to just become good pilots and good officers.
You bring up a good point. At that point, the late 60s, early 70s, that was really the height of the anti-war movement, right, just completely taking over, and you hear the horror stories of Vietnam veterans coming back and the way they were treated and not appreciated. And
it was awful. When he landed at Andrews Air Force Base, I think it was October 1st, 1967, he got off the plane almost unrecognizable. We were used to seeing photos of him with the mustache, mm-hmm, but he had lost 40 pounds. Got in the staff car. We were driven off base in a staff car. He was going to be dropped at the White House to talk to LBJ. And as we drove off the base, we drove right into a march on the Pentagon, right at protesters surrounding the car that started pounding on the car and spitting on the car. And I'll never forget my dad's face. And he turned to me and he just said, "What has happened to my country? What has happened?" And he was devastated.
And how did he finish out his career?
After the Air Force Academy, he was assigned as Inspector General of the Air Force at Norton Air Force Base. His job was to travel around the world inspecting the safety readiness of the bases. He did get over to Vietnam several times, and people like Colonel Joe Kittinger got mm-hmm. him up in an F-4 again to see if he could get that, draw up more MiGs, because
right.
you know, he officially got four MiGs, and because when you get five, you're an ace, you have to go home and go right. through all the hoopla, and Daddy didn't want that. He wanted to stay and be a combat commander, but we do know he did get number five. There were two witnesses to it, so... But it was just never reported, never confirmed. People have told me, "We know he got seven." And I said, "You know what? Let the myth be. The myth is great." And he told me, "Hey, if I'd had a gun on that plane, I could have gotten 10. So,
very good. What motivated you to start research on this book?
Well, I had known for 15 years. I mean, he'd been working on it, bits and pieces, two pages here, three pages there, nothing in chronological order. He would always send the pages to me to critique. And people were always urging him to get the book written. Other authors tried to help him. He said, no, 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 I'm doing it. Even Tom Clancy got on a plane and came out and sat with him in Steamboat and said, let me write your book for you. And Robin said, hell no, no one's going to put words in my mouth. Right. So, but when I started traveling with him extensively, like here to Oshkosh in the early 2000s, people would come up to me and say, make him write that book. We need his stories. Make him write it. Well, I knew at that point that it was going to be up to me. And so about a week before he passed away, I was his only caregiver, so we had wonderful 6 months together. A week before he passed away, he said how mad he was at himself for not getting the book pulled together and done. And I said, Daddy, you know what? I've known for 15 years I'd end up writing that book for you, so don't worry. He said, really? I said, yes, I'll get it done. He said, all right, young lady, that's an order. And I said, and he said, I'm so sorry I've left you such a mess. I said, don't worry about it. I'll sort it out. So I started 2 months later sorting through all the papers. There were probably 24 banker's boxes just with loose papers, right. Nothing organized. And I had to sort them out by year. That's how it started. And I just constructed an Excel spreadsheet with all the research for each assignment that he had. And then I would find the little bits and pieces he'd written. I interviewed pilots he'd flown with, did all the reading I could on everything that's been written about him and by him, and then I wrote it all together. So when you read the book, about 60% of the book are his exact words.
Okay.
His World War II diary, his Vietnam diary, and the rest of it are my words. And lovely Ed Rasmus edited the whole thing together and made sure that my language was right on with it. So it worked well. I'm really proud of it. People are loving it.
Good. It's a great book, and you will have it for sale tomorrow after your appearance at Warbirds in Review.
Yes.
10 o'clock tomorrow. P-38 SCAT 3 and an F-4 SCAT 23.
Both 27.
27. 27, honoring your father.
Yes, we're hoping that that's flying in today at 5 and be part of the show, coming from Holloman Air Force Base.
We're looking forward to it. Again, 10 o'clock tomorrow, Warbirds in Review. Christina Olds, pleasure to have you on the show this morning.
Thanks so much, Steve.
From the stand, this is EAA Radio.